What's your perspective on the approach that you can look at pregnancy as an opportunity where your hormones are arguably at their peak performance because you're not only taking care of your own body, but another, but from the perspective of like, okay, I could look at this opportunity like a maintenance phase or a calorie surplus phase.
Yeah, I think they say that the amount of energy a woman is expending when she's pregnant is equivalent to like running a marathon basically every day.
Wow, that's so cool.
You get that energy, but also you feel like a lot of it is going somewhere else.
Sure.
From a nutrition perspective, yes, you need extra calories, but you need less than you think.
Yep.
To an extent, I think sometimes that like we're eating for two, like just that that gets taken a little bit
too far
to the extremes. Yeah.
Let's link up with Krista on The Fix. She's a wellness coach with a focus on mental well-being and physical strength.
Hey, hey, Fix listeners. Welcome back to our latest episode of The Fix Podcast. I'm your host, Krista Huber, and today I'm delighted to introduce a really great friend, a fellow college alum, a fellow sorority sister, and a mom-to-be, as well as a amazing nutrition and fitness coach, my very, very amazing guest for today's conversation, and that is Katie Thune. So Katie is coming to talk all about her experience as a first-time mom, her experience with pregnancy, her experience as a nutrition coach, how her approach to fitness and wellness has changed over the last few years, not just because of her recent life events, but more specifically just because of aging and because of experience and the way we go through life. And we open up this conversation first talking about kind of the story that we tell ourselves and what we convince ourselves we should be doing and pressures that we might have put on ourselves because of the environments that we've been in. And then you go through life, years go by, and you start to understand that, hey, I want to show up a different way, or hey, I want to live my life in a specific way that is ultimately going to make me happy. And I actually think that's the overarching theme to this entire conversation. If you're tuning into this and you're thinking, oh, well, I can't really relate to the pregnancy component, I would urge you to keep listening because we went so much deeper than that. And Katie opened up to talk about her own experiences with mental health, how she really arrived at leading a much different lifestyle in terms of her health and her wellness. And of course, the bulk of the conversation is around her approach to pregnancy in terms of the birth route that she's chosen and why she's led herself to that path and how she arrived there, and just the importance of asking questions, the importance of opening yourself up to new ideas, of finding your voice and really coming up with a plan that is most suitable for you. And of course, that relates back to our nutrition coaching. That so relates back to the Fitness Fix. I am a huge proponent in one-on-one coaching for this exact reason, because at the end of the day, there are so many pillars that can work and so many different levers that we can pull that do have similarities from person to person. And maybe there's a toolbox or some kind of sandbox that looks really similar for just about anybody, but then there are a bunch of different toys and there are a bunch of different components of it that we can play with and we can utilize and we can adjust specific to you, but more importantly, specific to your goals. Now, if you're listening to this at the time that we dropped the episode, we are getting very close to the end of 2022 and 2023 is coming. You have a choice. You have a choice of how you want to show up for the rest of this year. And I've said this in recent episodes, but it's so important to me that I plan to continue to stress it over the next few before we hit the new year. You can either delay and you can decide that you're going to put your health and fitness on pause until January of 2023. Or you can make the decision to make maybe just one small change or take one small step. And maybe for you, that one small step is finally raising your hand and asking for help and potentially hiring a nutrition coach. I've got applications open to get you set up for success right now. And if you're somebody who is willing to finally raise your hand and recommit to you before everybody else waits until 2023, I would strongly encourage you to jump down into the show notes and hit apply on my coaching application, because we just might be doing a little special for anybody who's interested in coaching with me one-on-one. If you are somebody who's ready and you're listening to this and you're maybe thinking it over throughout the rest of this podcast, just kind of hold this thought with you for the next 45 minutes or so. Sit on it for however long you want to. But if you happen to be somebody who knows that now's finally the time and you're saying to yourself, okay, this is my sign, I'm going to go ahead and take it, we've got a special coaching offer that I can't spill the details on air, but I will give you a little hint that you just might get an additional month of coaching thrown into one of your packages. So reach out to me, fill out the coaching application. It's down in the show notes. You can also shoot me a DM. I'm available at the Krista Huber on Instagram or at thefix.officialpod. That's our podcast account. And would love to hear from any one of you who some of this might resonate with. With that, let's welcome Katie to the Fix Podcast. Katie, welcome to the Fix Podcast. As a Fix Podcast listener, I am honored to have you here today. As a fellow Washington and Lee grad, I'm also honored to have you here today. So we have so much to talk about. And first and foremost, congratulations on your pregnancy, because that's going to be a huge part of today's conversation. And again, I'm just really, really happy to have you here. We're going to dive right in with our first question. And as you know, I always like to kick off my show the same way. So I don't know if you've been on a caffeine, like, pause recently. So maybe you could tell us like your pre-pregnancy caffeine go-to order and then your current one if you've modified it in any way. But what do you usually sip on for your coffee on a day-to-day basis?
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited. And yes, huge coffee drinker, and I do still drink it. I had a pretty rough time in the beginning because I was under the impression I had to just stop drinking coffee, okay, like cold turkey. But right now I do usually like a cup and a half of normal coffee in the morning. Love heavy cream in it.
Nice.
Prior to that, it was probably more like a pot of coffee a day, which was not the best habit. Definitely still drinking.
Nice. Well, good. And have you always been like a heavy cream kind of girl, or will you change up what you mix it with?
You know what? I've tried a lot of things over the years. I've tried the butter thing for a bit. It's a little too oily. I just love heavy cream. There's no sugar in it. I'm pretty serious about my sugar consumption.
Okay.
Occasionally, I'll do like a, I'm here for like a pumpkin spice every now and again, like an ice creamer, but I'm a bit of a freak about the sugar, so I just love heavy cream for that.
Nice. It does taste really good, and I feel like, honestly, it gets overlooked because everybody is so focused on like as few calories as possible, watching their fat intake, what have you, that they would almost automatically assume that wouldn't be the best thing to put in your coffee. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Yeah. Oh, you know what I will say? You only need like a tablespoon, maybe two. So,
which is
like,
nothing.
Don't need much of it.
Yeah. Good point. I like that. Cool. Well, we got our coffee question out the way, and now we're going to move into the fun stuff. So we have a couple of different reasons why you're here. I alluded to one of them. But I really want to know, throw in your coaching, throw in your fitness experience in response to this question, but specifically, who is Katie? And you can take that and answer it however you want, whether it's like the resume route or more of the who you are as an individual and what you stand for and your values, anything goes. And why should we care about this conversation today and what you have to say?
Yeah, so who I am a holistic health coach. So I work with high achieving men and women, working on taking them from like overwhelm and self-doubt to more clarity and confidence in the gym, in their kitchen, and in their clothing. I definitely took a winding path to get there. Like you said, we both came out of Washington and Lee. I was a biology graduate, did a lot of things before finding myself here, and it was a bit of self-discovery. Spent some time in the traditional medical system as like an educator, among other things, but really love the coaching and really looked to you when I started doing that, because it's not something many people come out of WNL doing.
Nope.
So really, I love doing it. And then I said, oh, gosh, Krista's wearing army pants and flip-flops. So I used to wear army pants and flip-flops, but no, that was huge seeing somebody else doing it kind of.
Thank you.
Dead that self-doubt.
I love it. And yes, I think that's, if you'd like to, I'd honestly love to start there, because I think that's a huge part of where we are in terms of being in your late 20s, about to be 30. I don't know when your birthday is, but I know you're right there. So it's this point in your life when you think about, as a WNL grad too, and for anybody who's listening to this, you can certainly relate. There, frankly, is just a lot of pressure. And we had this conversation, and I think it's an important one to have. It's very relevant to the last podcast episode I recorded with Julie Fouché, because it has so much to do with your emotional health. And like you said, Katie, the self-discovery piece. So why don't we unpack that a little bit more? Talk to me about, like, yeah, you talked about the kind of the steps that you took in different career positions that you've held, but let's get into the emotional piece of it. What has that part of your journey been like for you to now, and I've watched you do this, and even just in the way I'm admiring the way you describe the type of people that you work with, because that's a 360 probably completely from a conversation we had maybe 10 months ago. So kudos to you for figuring that out, because that's a huge step in this process and really creating a business for yourself too.
Yeah, well, I know you can relate to this, and probably a lot of people can. All of the people I went to school with, my degree was in biology, pretty much everyone was going to medical school. Just didn't seem like the right thing for me, but I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. But there is kind of that feeling that I have to do something that is either a doctor, a lawyer, an architect, an investment banker, like something that I quote unquote made it. And to be clear, like, nobody ever said this to me. It wasn't something that like my friends were saying, like, oh my God, you need to do this or else you're a loser. It was all internal. It was all internal dialogue, but it was what I saw around me. So I kind of explored, like, I went into medical software sales because it was so related to medicine. You make a lot of money doing it. So I'll give that a shot. And while doing that, I was just kind of miserable. I was an athlete in college. I always had a team around me. And when we left college, it was like the rug got totally pulled out from underneath of me. There's no support system. I had no structure. And we also came from a very work hard, play hard environment. So it was 4 hours of hardcore labs a day, these classes with four people, so there's nowhere to hide, like super intense class, soccer, and then we also played really hard, right? So there was that just absolute, like, type A, like everything that I do is like all in, all in, all in. So that mentality really followed me, and what that ended up turning into was no healthy habits and a whole lot of psychiatric diagnoses. Like, first it was depression, and then it was bipolar, and there were different mood disorders. Then it was, no, you don't have any of those things. You actually have undiagnosed ADHD. So there are all kinds of, like, prescriptions thrown at it. And it was like everyone was just throwing spaghetti at the wall and trying to see what sticks. And what I eventually found was that, like, I'm eating. Can I curse?
Yeah, of course. Go for it, girl. Shit. No filter.
I'm eating shit. I can take Adderall during the day and, like, get my stuff down, and then drink in the evening and, like, not get any sleep and just not take care of myself. And I'm never going to get out of this vicious cycle unless I start taking care of myself. So once I started doing that, I was able to, and I know there's a place for prescription medicine, absolutely. It just wasn't for me, and it wasn't what I needed. What I needed was for somebody to kick me in the pants and say, like, hey, you're not doing absolutely anything to take care of yourself. So once I started doing those things, I felt so good. I was like, this is what people need to feel like to, like, go out and be the best doctor ever, be the best architect ever, the best lawyer ever. Because when you feel really good, you can go and, like, do your best. Nobody does their best when they don't feel good about themselves. So that's how I started working, like, really with those more high-achieving people. And high-achieving doesn't mean you're a lawyer. You can be a stay-at-home mom and be high-achieving. You're just that driven person, kind of like everything I do really hard. But they end up a lot of times putting their focus on everything else except themselves, not really realizing that when you take care of yourself, like, you can do all those things so much better. So that's kind of how I found my way to this place where I coach the nutrition, I coach the fitness. And, like, my goal is for you to learn this lifestyle that you don't really need a coach again, because you've learned how to take care of yourself and just go, like, freaking crush it forever.
And on top of that, I have so much to say on this because we have the same exact client pool. And I feel like I'm looking in the mirror as I hear you talk, and I feel like I'm hearing myself, which is great. But it's really like that layer of the last piece you just mentioned. Because you are a high achieving individual, because you are a type A, you can go do this by yourself. And it's the and my Fitness Fix clients know this, and the way that I speak to them and the way that I coach them, it's all about the shedding of your ego. And usually the first phase we have to go through is actually raising your hand and saying, I need some help. And first and foremost, I really appreciate you opening up about your journey, especially in context of different mental health diagnoses. As you know, I've been in the same situation, and I completely agree. And while not everyone's experience is the same, I'm really with you in that I personally tried different methods to go different routes in terms of specific medicines. And while I felt in the moment it was the best decision I could have made, it was the best decision I could have made with an asterisk next to it. And the asterisk was with the information I had available to me. And that has become such a pillar of my own coaching, to be able to just be a sponge and be able to open myself up to new ways of thinking, listening to tons of other podcasts, listening to people who have completely different opinions than my own, and really diving into research and trying to listen back to my clients to figure out why one method might have been working for somebody before, but now all of a sudden it doesn't. That's something that in the last even 2 months, I would say, has been a huge part of my own journey, because I've spent the last 18 months throwing out all the stuff and all the mechanisms and all the tools and all of the different levers that you can pull, and being like, okay, just because these worked for me when I was 22, I made a joke about this in an Instagram post last week, doesn't mean it's going to work for the 30-year-old version of Krista. And I also feel that that kind of goes back to some of that type A, high pressure. I was smiling so big when you made the comment about the fact that no one ever told you you should have this narrative. Nobody ever told me that either. I just had this conversation with my parents in the last 2 weeks, and they've said to me, we don't understand where you got this from. And I'm like, honestly, I don't either, but I do think it's environmental, because much like you and sharing the same college experience, I'm like, amen to everything you were saying. And on top of that, I came out of a really intense high school environment, which is probably what prepared me very well for Washington and Lee. Do I look back on any of that and say to myself, oh, I'm upset about that, or it wasn't worth it? Hell no, because for as much as it might have really derailed us in some ways and like kind of shook us when we first left that environment and came out of post-grad, I think it's propelled us forward so much faster than had we not had some of those experiences too. Say that to say, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword, you know?
Yeah. I have the same conversation often with it tends to be women who are looking at when they were 30. You were on the money. I'm about to turn 30. But it'll be a 6-year-old woman looking at when I was 30, I was able to do this. And okay, how much has changed
in your whole life?
Years. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, that's kind of the perfect segue. I didn't do this on purpose, but that is the perfect segue into talking about you being pregnant for the first time. And part of the reason why we've been talking about having a podcast for a while, but to make it as timely as possible, as I mentioned pre-recording, I was going through Instagram one day, and I love all of the stories that you put up and interacting with a lot of your followers and seeing the types of questions that women are asking you, or your followers are asking you, around your first time experience being pregnant. And I just thought, you know what, like, let's use this as the topic of conversation, because there is no better time to describe a huge shift in your approach, because you have to, but also because it's like this newfound experience of really, I assume, learning to listen to your body in a very different way. And as somebody who, you mentioned, grew up an athlete, played soccer, and was a very good soccer player, I will brag for you, at a high level, like, how has that transition of always being athletic, despite the fact that maybe you didn't have the best habits, and admitting that you were putting a lot of other priorities ahead of you personally, how do you find now in navigating your first trimester into your second, what has that looked like for you? Because I would assume from conversations I've had with my own girlfriends too, who've been where you are, that is like a very eye-opening adjustment, to say the least.
Yeah, it's been eye-opening. And I will say I'm about to turn 30, and I'm the first of pretty much anyone that I spend a lot of time with to be pregnant. Okay. So I haven't had a lot of people to turn to and say, hey, what was this like for you?
Sure.
I have like my mom who's pregnant like
years ago, 30 years ago with you. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot has changed since then.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting. All the books, all the podcasts. The first thing I noticed was the just total change in my mood. Which is challenging when we do what we do, because we work with people all day and people with a lot of emotions, and it's, you know, people think it's just like, oh, you're telling people what to eat. No, like you're also kind of like the therapist and everything else. So when you're feeling like everything is kind of irritating and then someone starts complaining, you know, like if someone complained about how they're tired or something, and in my mind, I'm like, this guy is complaining about being tired, and I have felt like I need to throw up all day. So that part was just hard to read because I'm not used to feeling like that. Usually I'm like,
cool, and you don't have control over it. It's one thing when you're saying like, oh, I didn't get enough sleep last night. Like this is a pervasive feeling.
It was pervasive, but yeah. So that was the first kind of hurdle to get over, and then just not feeling well. So listening to my body was an absolute must because I was training probably 6 days a week. I was pretty, I don't want to call it strict, but like I worked within a framework with my macros.
You're very structured. How about that?
Yeah, exactly. I had these boundaries, I had freedom within boundaries, but I stuck to those boundaries. And that all went out the window. I could not look at a vegetable. I really only wanted carbohydrates. I am not like a bread person, not a sandwich, not a bagel. Not because they're bad. I just don't typically enjoy eating them.
Okay.
I ate 3 bagels in one day. My husband was like, who are you? So there was just a lot, like definitely a lot mentally, because then I sit there and I'm like, oh my God, my blood sugar. I just ate 3 bagels. So I had to kind of get over and just find like little tools that worked for me, like eating the Magic Spoon cereal instead of the Kellogg's at the grocery store, because at least it has protein and fiber and there's no added sugar in it. So I started just looking for those little things and just taking it easy, because there was probably a 4-week period that I could not work out at all.
Yeah. Do you mind talking about that a little more? Because I remember when you first announced on your Instagram that you were pregnant, I saw that and you had posted like the very first time you went back into the gym. So if you could take me back to that, I think that's such a relevant experience to describe, not just for anybody as a female who may become pregnant or is currently, but also for anybody who's quote unquote fallen off their fitness routine after a while, which if we expand through the last 2-3 years, that's a story for a lot of people.
Yeah. And it's so easy once you start sitting on the couch and feeling
so
tired,
easy.
It's just a cycle. And you're like, I know I should work out and I'll feel better. But literally the last thing I want to do is go work out.
No.
I'm very fortunate. I have a husband who will like poke and prod me to get me to go, because he knows I'll be happy once I go. And finding, I am a personal trainer, but I'm not specific. I don't ever specifically work with pregnant women. So for me, going and finding a program that I felt like was effective, that I felt comfortable doing, I found Mama Stay Fit, which I found very helpful throughout. So finding a program and then just literally one day I feel well enough, I have to go. Even if I get there and I do one thing, I put my shoes up and I went. And once you start going, it gets so much easier to keep going. But getting that first step in is definitely challenging. So either find somebody who will drag you there kicking and screaming, sometimes that's what it takes, or have like an accountability person who you'll meet there, and then just doing one thing. Like for me, it was a quick workout. I get winded very easily now. You'd think all the blood volume would like make working out easier, but it doesn't. So we modify and we move on.
What about from a, we could weave nutrition into this too. But to your point about blood volume and the expectation that maybe working out would be somewhat, and I'll put this in quotes, easier. What's your perspective on the approach that you can look at pregnancy as an opportunity where your hormones are arguably at their peak performance, because you're not only taking care of your own body, but another, and you're, if once you're feeling better, granted, if you're feeling nauseous all day, I understand that you might not be eating enough, especially with another human being in the picture. But from the perspective of like, okay, I could look at this opportunity like a maintenance phase or a calorie surplus phase, at what point do you think you could kind of adopt that lens to change your approach in the gym that could be a little more similar to where you were prior to being pregnant?
I think as soon as you start to feel better. Okay. I will say that you have all of this extra going on, but mm-hmm. so much of your energy is going to growing literally an entire new organ. Your yeah. placenta is literally an organ, and then you're growing another being. I think they say that the amount of energy a woman is expending when she's pregnant is equivalent to like running a marathon basically
wow.
every day.
That's so cool.
Isn't it? So yeah. So like yeah. You get that energy, but also you feel like a lot of it is going somewhere else.
Sure.
But from a nutrition perspective, yes, you need extra calories, but you need less than you think.
Yep.
And while I totally sympathize and like agree with you need to do what makes you feel good, to an extent, I think sometimes that like we're eating for two, like just that, mm-hmm. that gets taken a little bit
too far
to the extremes. Yeah. Because what you do every single day is affecting the health
totally.
Of the person that you're growing. So working out is absolutely beneficial. And I think as soon as you feel good enough, start doing it. There's really not much. Be safe in there. There's not many things you can do that are going to injure him in any way in the gym. And if you're really uncomfortable, just do what I did, find a program.
Right. And I love the fact that you mentioned the program, because even as someone who has expertise, it doesn't mean you know everything and this is new territory for you. And I think the confidence that's provided in having some kind of coach or some kind of guideline to follow can really help you put together a plan that, one, you can stick to it in the same way you would work with a coach, whether that's for nutrition, fitness, or otherwise. But also, it's just like, there is a hesitation of like, do I want to experiment with this, that, and the other thing? And I think that also brings up a great point that I'd love to ask you as somebody who had a very strong fitness routine before, was also not afraid to lift heavy. What has that transition been like? Because this is such a controversial topic, right? Like, this is the part in the podcast that people are going to be like, I don't agree, or yes, I totally feel you. So I want you to unpack this for us as the person going through it. You love to strength train. We know the value of resistance training. We can plug it all we want. But there's definitely a camp of people that are like, oh, well, you should really pull back because you don't want to hurt your back. You don't want to do this. You are expending a lot of energy doing something else that is very taxing, right? But at the same time, there's the other side of things. And the person I think of when I think about this journey is somebody like an Emily Breeze, as someone who's lived in Charlotte and has seen her in action. And a lot of the content that she posts is around this subject matter specifically. She's taken so much heat over continuing to do CrossFit style workouts through 4+ pregnancies. And has always had to come back and be like, well, my doctor has said this is safe because it's based on where I was before. So give me your take on that as someone who is actually pregnant right now and going through it.
Yeah, I will say the hardest part for me was I had to drop the ego and like drop the weight just because I was exhausted. But I don't, obviously, if she's done it before pregnancies and they've all gone swimmingly, sometimes people just find their own business.
Right.
It's working for her.
Sure.
But I think that I would agree. Like, the programs I'm doing, they still have a conditioning portion that you're, like, mm-hmm. doing, like, Tabatas on the rower, like,
nice.
Some sort of HIIT training.
Okay.
My lift, I would say I dropped from a max. Like, I was squatting, like, I think, like, 230 pounds prior to pregnancy. There's just not a reason for me to do it right now because I'm not actively trying to build muscle. I'm
sure.
trying to maintain muscle, and it takes a little bit less to do that. So I have dropped to probably like 70% of the max of what I was doing before.
Okay.
And honestly, that has more to do with just not feeling
as strong
to it.
Sure.
Yeah. And I'd
more
rather
so
just
mentally.
Like, focus on the form. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But if I didn't have that like 4-ish week break of not doing anything mm-hmm. and I were just able to keep lifting, I probably be lifting a lot more than I am now. But you would never like take a client who had 4 months of sitting on the couch and say like, go do what
Ever.
You were doing 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So that is probably what slowed me down more. I think that if you feel good and if your midwife or doctor or you're working with is like, heck yeah, go for it, why wouldn't you?
Totally. And I love the point you made about it has to all be relative to where you were before. This is huge, even from purely scientific standpoint, I was listening to a podcast last week with Lane Norton. He's been on a little bit of a podcast circuit recently, being a guest on other people's shows. And he shared this stat that just like blew my mind because it's amazing. Like, it's such a positive. And he mentioned that there was some research done, and I don't want to botch it because this is probably not exactly what it is, but it was something like over the course of about a 10-year period, in that time, or even for your whole life, honestly, but minimum 10 years, you're going to build a certain amount of muscle, right? And think about it, 10 years, that's going to include some stops, some starts, some detours in your fitness journey. But if you look at that time period and you look at the amount of muscle that you've been able to put on, research has since shown and studies have since shown that you could reduce your workload and your strain of your fitness routine, whether it's like, I think it was more specifically around your volume and your weight. So a combination of the two. If you cut that by a third, so if you cut it by 33%, so to your point, you still maintained about 70%. So you're kind of right there. You would still maintain your muscle mass for the rest of your life. Like, that's amazing to me. That I think that's just something that anybody, if you're in a fitness journey where you may feel like you've had this big gap and something stopped you, aka a lot of people could say that their COVID fitness routine completely changed their relationship with fitness and they've been working through the last 2 years to try to get back to where they were before. I think you could like rest in that and say to yourself, this is so cool. I heard that and I was like, okay, good. It made me feel a lot better.
Right. And that's part of the beauty of building muscle is you get so much bang for your buck. Like, you know, it does not take 2 hours a day. You go on at that.
Yeah.
And to your point, like if I had something, like if I was a CrossFit competitor and I knew 3 months postpartum I wanted to be competing again,
sure,
I would need to be training harder right now. These like,
okay,
there's a professional soccer player, like Crystal Dunn, had a baby and just played and like scored the winning goal in a game recently. She had to be training throughout her pregnancy to just get something to go back to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a professional athlete, so like I'm happy with the goal of just maintaining my muscle mass. But for those people, like they're allowed to have this pregnancy be the most important thing in the world right now and also be looking to something afterwards. And for them, it means that they have to train at a higher level right now.
It's their job.
I think that's totally okay. Yeah. Like some of us have to do this for a job and some of us have to go to the gym.
Yeah. And then let's relate that back to your point of you don't take somebody off the couch and right into the gym lifting at their heaviest weight if they can barely use a barbell. It's the same holding true, but maybe just at the other extreme in that every decision we make around our fitness and nutrition, let's take the pregnancy component out of it entirely. It's all about what your ultimate goals are. And it is okay for those to evolve and change. They actually should evolve and change over time. It's just knowing and setting up expectations that are, one, realistic, and two, that you have a plan in place that recognizes the fact, like I love your soccer example, that woman knew, like she knew that she was going to be pregnant, and then not too long after that, she set out a plan for herself that she wanted to be back on the soccer field. And, you know, I touched on it really briefly. You did as well in saying like, do what you want to, like do what's going to make you feel the best. But I think there's just a lot of scrutiny around the fact that because it was seemingly taboo for X amount of time or because it's not your story, then people are just really quick to pass some judgment on it.
Yeah. And I do find like something I often talk to clients about, particularly younger clients, is the friend who says like, ooh, she can't eat that because she's healthy. Like, she's
or people trying to pressure you to drink or not drink or saying like, oh, why aren't you having alcohol?
Yeah. And it's because it's a reflection back on them. When you make if there's someone who makes no decisions around that and like there's no boundaries, they're not really taking care of themselves, but then they see you doing that, it makes you stop and think. Like that definitely happened to me when I wasn't doing any of that stuff. And, you know, you have the friends like getting up in the morning and running. You're like, oh, like, I hate that person. But I think it's the same thing. And I think there's a lot of emotions around pregnancy particularly. So it's really easy to point the finger and say, like, she shouldn't be doing that. When really there's that little nagging question saying, like, should I be doing that? Is that better for me if I'm doing that too?
Yeah. And, you know, let's transition into kind of like if you look at the phases of pregnancy, right? Like right now we're talking a lot about where you currently are and training and anticipating what's to come next. How do you feel from what you've been educating yourself on and just literally how your body is feeling? What is your thought process around how this type of fitness and this being a pillar of your life will prepare you for birth? because that's the big event, right?
Obviously, I have a little bit of naivety around this. I've been done it before, but I'm looking at it. It's an athletic event, right? It's hours long. It's a lot of energy. And I'm someone who loves an athletic challenge. So I'm not saying I'm going to like love it at all moments, but I'm looking at it as like I'm training for it. It is something athletic. I've trained for athletic things for all of my life. So why wouldn't I train for this one? It's arguably the most important athletic event mm-hmm. of my life. But it is, and you know, we can describe it as like a marathon, but that's how I'm looking at it. I'm not looking at it from like a fear perspective. I'm looking at it as I was made for this. There's things I can do to help the process by like being in shape, having good cardiovascular health, taking care of myself mentally and physically, and just knowing that like it's going to happen. We're going to do it.
Yeah, it's going to happen. You're right. And let's expand on that even more and tell me about your decisions around the type of birth that you're pursuing and how you kind of arrived at this, whether that was between you and your partner and what those conversations kind of looked like, because I know this is something specifically that you've put a lot of time and research into. So I just love your thoughts on it.
Yeah, so I'm doing a home birth, which if you had asked me a couple of years ago, I would have told you that like flower children and hippies out in the desert do home births. But as it turns out, I actually spent a ton of time like researching this, looking at our current medical system and how it approaches birth. And it was not like a willy-nilly flower child decision. It was like a very well thought out and research decision that my husband and I decided on pretty early on. By the time I was 8 weeks pregnant, I think we had made the decision that we were doing home birth.
So what have been some of your findings? Like, let's break it down a little bit more.
Yeah. I guess I should just start by blanket saying, I said it's an emotional topic. Just because I'm deciding on something doesn't like, you know, I don't want an epidural. That doesn't mean that you were wrong or bad for getting an epidural. These are just things that I've looked into and I've come to a certain conclusion based on like my perception, my experience, and my tolerance for risk. But everybody's different, right? What I found looking at all of this is we cannot expect every single person to look at the same information and come to the same conclusion. Mm-hmm. And that is something with pregnancy that just gets, you know, like I have a glass of wine. It's like, there's somebody like, oh my God, what are you doing? But like, we can't, there's just nothing. It's not, I guess ethical is the word I'm looking for, and to anticipate that we're all going to abide by all the exact same set of principles, because the information is, there's just so much of it, and so much has to do with it, with your perception and your tolerance for risk. So when we were looking at, I guess I should back up and also say that when I point out things with the medical system, not saying all labor and delivery nurses are evil, not all obstetricians are evil, but I don't want to shy away from pointing out the things that I saw as kind of red flags, because we don't address them and we don't fix them by ignoring them. I have a lot of respect for the medical profession, and like obstetricians are highly trained surgeons and they do incredible things. Just some of the stuff from what I saw from a low risk birth perspective, I decided that was not the route that I wanted to go. So with that said, when we first started looking at it, I went to a home birth midwife just to chat with her and see like what it was like. And
yeah, because you have literally no idea.
Yeah, I had no idea. This is totally new to me. My only experience with anything medical really is the traditional Western medical allopathic system. She sat down with me for almost an hour. This woman did not know if I was going to pay her, didn't know me, just sat down with me for almost an hour and just spoke with me. She had answers to all of my questions. They are contrary to what a lot of people think. They don't just like show up with a towel and say like, I'm here. they have drugs, they have tools, like they're very highly trained professionals. So I left there feeling like, oh my gosh, like I feel like that was a really great experience.
Okay.
I thought after going to the OB would be like a really hard decision. But when I went to the OB, it was a very typical medical office experience. You go in, you sit in the waiting room for 20 minutes. You see, it was a nurse midwife that I saw, and I maybe was in the room with her for 3.5 minutes. She ordered an ultrasound and said, do you have any questions? And it wasn't like, I knew the way the question was asked, she was not going to sit there for 50 minutes with me and answer all of my questions. Of course, I have questions. I've never been pregnant before. So I have so many questions. I don't even know what questions
to ask. To start with, you're probably so overwhelmed.
So from that moment, I was like, well, do I really want my whole pregnancy experience to be like these in and out appointments when I have someone that I could sit down with for an hour at every appointment and like talk through things and be comfortable? Because when it comes down to it, like, birth is a very emotional experience. It's not just like a medical thing. We have really medicalized it a lot, and it's kind of looked at as like a, I'm not sick, so I don't want to go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. I'm not ill. I'm pregnant and I was made to do this. If something goes wrong, I will go to the hospital, but sure. I don't want to spend 9 months thinking that it will. And the midwife's approach is very like, we talk through everything and get very comfortable with each other. I think something everyone can relate to is like when you go in a public restroom and you're trying to pee, yes, we're going to go there. And like, you have that moment where you're like, it's not happening. Like, nothing comes out.
Yep.
Imagine trying to push a baby out in front of like a doctor you've met like three times for 30 minutes and a bunch of strangers in the room. It's not comfortable. And at the end of the day, like, comfort really matters. Even research shows like having a strong support system, like a consistent support system, and being somewhere comfortable really does help with that process. And it's really hard to say no in a medical establishment. I know we all have that experience where we go in and we like the person starts talking and you just kind of like nod and like, yes, whatever they say.
Yeah.
I am a questioner and I really want to know like, why am I doing this? What does it do? I don't take any prescription medications. I like to know like why, what are the risks? What are the possibilities of something actually going wrong if I don't take it? And it's not always well received in the medical establishment.
It always comes off, and not to cut you off, but it almost comes off as combative a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And I find when I have this conversation with my clients that what's popping into my head as you're saying this is I think about how fucking annoying it is for my clients to get lab work. It is like, if I had a dollar, I say this probably twice a week, for any doctor that would not allow my client to test for a full thyroid panel, I wouldn't need to be a nutrition coach. And I hate that, because that's where the mechanism for change actually is. And I think your point of you saying like, you get that like clammed up moment of like, oh, this is a professional, this is their space. Like, if you look at it, it's not as like a power play, but that dynamic comes into play. And so you kind of put this like wall up that you're like, oh, well, they know best. Like, maybe I don't want to ask all these questions, or maybe I don't want to push back. And I've never actually thought about that before, because sometimes I ask myself, like, why don't my clients feel more strongly? Like, when I'm telling them, go in there, use me as your scapegoat a little bit, to be like, I actually have another professional that's requesting this information. And some of them still won't do it. But what you're saying makes a ton of sense.
It's really hard, and you don't want to be disrespectful, because they're highly intelligent. They spend a lot of time doing what they do, but of they course. Are within a certain model.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about, and this is going to sound really silly, but one of the first things I thought about was that stinking gestational diabetes test.
Sure.
And
it's very controversial.
I've already said I'm a freak about my blood sugar. I've done the levels thing. Like, I eat in a specific way. And I was like, I'm not fasting for 12 hours, drinking 50 grams of straight up glucose in liquid form. It's documented. People who tend to eat pretty healthy can spike false positives on that test.
Sure.
Because I never consume 50 grams of glucose on
its own. If you think about it from like a very like just like a mechanism, again, like just think about it from a super clinical level. And you and I have both used the levels method and understanding of like what actually spikes our own blood sugar. Like, for me, coffee was huge, and that was my biggest takeaway from using that any kind of CGM for a month. Like, my biggest takeaway was coffee and how stable my blood sugar actually was. And you know why? It's because every time I eat, there's always a protein, there's always a carb, and there's always a fat. I never would drink, like you're saying, something like that sort of 50 grams of sugar, like, of course that's going to spike your blood sugar. How could it not? Like, how could logically it not do that?
And it just, I tried to wrap my mind around, like, we have glucometers, we have all of these things. Mm-hmm. Like, why wouldn't you just have me eat my normal diet?
Sure.
And see what my blood sugar is doing. Sure. Which, when I talked to the midwife, you can opt out of the gestational diabetes. You can mm-hmm. do, like, a smoothie that has all kinds of fruit in it and stuff. You could do the traditional one. You could prick your finger. I ended up ordering a levels kit, and I'm just going to stick a levels on my arm, which, like, it's an actual indication of what's happening. And that's
what a
just
cool
like
way
really,
to use it too. I love that.
Yeah. So when I looked at like the different processes, I found one of them was very much like, if I don't want to do things in a certain way, I'm going to have to argue with them and stick to my guns every single time. Mm-hmm. And that can be exhausting, especially when you're not feeling well. And someone's like, come on, we're just going to do it this way. Like, we're going to get the flu shot. And I don't know if that's controversial. It didn't used to be controversial to not get a flu shot. But I don't want a flu shot. I don't want to argue with them every time I go in. With the midwife, we weigh the pros and cons. We talk it out. And when I make a decision, it's a decision with informed consent. She talks to me about mm-hmm. the risk and benefit of each thing. And I make a decision and it's not argued with. Of course, if like there was something like more of a high risk situation, then we would have a different conversation, but I'm not in a low risk pregnancy. I have absolutely no health things going on. So I really appreciate that she just trusts my judgment. She's willing to have a conversation with me. It's very much a peer-to-peer conversation. Like, I know she's highly trained and like I trust her. It's not like one of my friends is delivering the baby, but I'm very comfortable with her and we can have conversations. I think if you're afraid to ask questions to the person who's going to be delivering your baby, maybe there's an issue there because you should not be afraid to ask questions. Again, like circling, but when we coach nutrition, it would be so easy if I could just say, like, here's how much protein, carbs, and fat to eat. Here's how much you exercise. Go do it. Mm-hmm. How many times have you been able to do that?
Never, ever, ever. That takes the human being out of it. Like, we're
emotional.
Humans.
Yeah, exactly. We're emotional. We all have, like, different thoughts and feelings and fears. And so, it, again, like, it's a system that has really removed a lot of the emotion out of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't want that. Like, this, again, one – arguably the most emotional thing I've ever done in my life. So I want to have that comfort and to know, like, no matter what, like, I'm not going to feel self-conscious about what's going on. And I'm not going to be afraid to ask a question. I think that's the biggest thing.
I love it. And I think, too, it goes back to your point of listening to your body, but also being confident in listening to your body. Because from the outside looking in and from other conversations I've had with friends who have had children already, that is where I think that a lot of the controversy can kind of split one of two ways. It's like, it's brand new to you. You don't know what to expect. But then let's talk about the fact that we live in an age where we can talk about this in the context of nutrition for hours. There's so much information available at your fingertips that you're like, one, holy shit, where do I start? Two, what's even accurate? Three, how can I apply this in a lens that is going to work best for Katie? In a lens that's going to work best for Krista? Because even for as much as you and I resonate in terms of the style in which we coach, again, I think so much of that is like this nature versus nurture conversation. And I really feel like the nurture piece is probably why you and I have arrived at a lot of the same conclusions. But everything you were just describing, I couldn't help but go back to, like, I see a parallel to dieting. I see a parallel to nutrition. I see a parallel to the wellness industry overall, because it's like, what do you do to figure out what's going to work best for you? And I feel like, if anything, I would hope that somebody listening to this conversation, that's a big takeaway for them.
Yeah, definitely. Just knowing that there's options, but that's why I wanted to like talk about it. Was I didn't even know this was like a viable option.
Yeah.
But even if you don't, it's not for everybody. If you're going to be at home thinking, oh my God, what if something goes wrong?
You don't want to be in that type of mindset.
No. So a home birth is not for you. Like I said, my mindset is very much like, I feel like the odds of something going that terribly wrong are extremely low. I'll go to the hospital if something does, but I was made for this. If you feel that fear, like even if you know, like, okay, everything's gonna be okay, but if there's that fear, then it's not for you. But knowing that you still have the option to like opt out of things with your obstetrician, you still have the option to ask questions. This informed consent, I think, is something that sadly is becoming like less and less prevalent. It's just kind of like, here's what you should do.
And it's assumed.
Yeah, and it's just assumed that you're going to do it. So I do think that it's okay to respectfully ask questions. I understand if someone comes to me and says, like, you know, I'm coaching them, and then they start spouting off everything they read on Google, I also get annoyed. So I understand annoyance of, like, okay, I went to medical school and did residency, and, like, but you tell me how birth works.
Great comparison for sure. Yeah. It's like someone talks to me about keto, and I'm like, there's like an immature coach inside of me that's like, oh, where should I begin? And then there's the, I could totally relate to that. I literally just had somebody ask me yesterday what my thoughts were around intermittent fasting. And I was like, kind of pat myself on the back when I typed my reply, because I made it so much of about the response that everyone hates, but is the response that's necessary. And the first thing I wrote was, it depends. And then I walked through like three different scenarios. And I was like, here's plan A, plan B, plan C. Now let me talk to you about you as the individual and how you fit into any of those three buckets.
Yeah, it depends. Literally everything. Again, you cannot expect everybody to look at the same. And some people might love intermittent fasting, some people might not, but we can't all come to the same conclusion on it. And what I found with birth is, even if your OB will let you opt out of certain things, the hospital that you go to might also have policies like you're not allowed to eat or drink some clear fluids. Like, that's it. Okay. Even if you labor for 30 hours, you might have to deliver on your back. You might have to get an IV in your arm. There's all these things that are policy related. I think there's a lot of very good reasons for interventions with birth, but because it's hospital policy is not one of them. That just, there's a lot of stupid policies that exist, and we all know it. And no matter what medicine or anything else. So, like, I'm not someone just going to be like, yeah, okay, I'll just do it because it's policy. I didn't want to have a negative experience because of that.
Sure.
So again, same thing. When I look at all of this, I'm like, I need to have some choice here. And I felt like I was getting choice at home. I realized that, like, the big elephant in the room that everybody's thinking is like, well, what if something goes wrong? And I do think that we're definitely conditioned to think things go wrong a lot more often than they do. Most people have very normal birth, particularly when you're low risk pregnancy, which I am. And I don't want to spend 9 months afraid. And unfortunately, the US, we spend the most money on pregnancy, like women's healthcare. We have pretty much the most medicalized system. And I believe our current rank is 55th as far as maternal mortality.
Wow.
Pretty much every other industrialized country has better outcomes than the United States. So really, if I was looking for, like, what's the safest thing to do for my birth, I should be flying to, like, Iceland, because they have excellent healthcare. so it's just a system that, like, something is not going quite right. The agreed upon rate for C-section is 10-15%, and ours sits at like 33% at the most recent I could find. And that, I looked at my local hospital, and their most recent rate that I could find was a 33% C-section rate. So now I'm trying to kind of find the logic of, so 1 in 3 women, their bodies aren't built to produce a baby. And then when you think, like, down the line, whether you think it was God or evolution or whatever, the grand design was that 1 in 3 of us can't reproduce without a surgeon. It just doesn't really make sense. And I don't know what the answer is. I know that there's a lot of pressure on doctors. I know that we don't have the healthiest populace in the world. But I don't want my shots to be 1 in 3 of having, like, a serious medical intervention unless it's absolutely needed. And I realize that.
And under the circumstances, like, you just got done making such excellent points around the fact that it's a very emotional experience. There's a lot of unknown for the first time. So let's think about it logically from the place of, if you were in distress and somebody was throwing out this option to you and your partner, what, like, you don't know how you're going to react in that moment. And chances are you're not going to be like, no, we're going to do it our way. Like, you're going to be like, holy shit, we got to figure this out. Like, that's a natural human response.
That's so many people that, you know, I've spoken to a lot of women that when you say you're having a home birth, I thought women were going to start being like, oh my God, you're nuts. But I had like a 2-week period where every time I came home, a woman had someone told me about how they had a really negative experience and wow. wish they had another option.
Sure.
And yeah, I was like, very, I was like, I don't know what's happening. So I thought it would be the opposite. Mm-hmm. But that happens, and it's not because people aren't well-meaning, but when you're in a lot of pain and someone's like, just take the epidural, just take the epidural, they might wear you down enough that you just take the epidural.
Sure.
And that's not to say that some people don't need them, that they're not a good option for some people. But I can see how someone goes in not wanting an epidural and then just, you know, things escalate and it keeps being suggested and suggested and suggested. And then you get one. Or, you know, a doctor says, like, you know what, like, this isn't looking good. Like, we got to get the baby out now because they're using, like, constant fetal monitoring, which is extremely controversial. And now you're like, okay, well, now he's basically telling me, like, if I don't decide to go to surgery right now, my baby's gonna die. So I can see, like, that all does not scream very good emotional experience to me. I know with what I'm doing that if I end up in the hospital with a C-section, it's because I absolutely needed it. And
sure.
I really want that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your candor on that. And there is a lot to think about, again, from that emotional standpoint, that until you live it, it's not going to cross your mind. And I'm just glad to hear that you're taking this perspective too, again, like, to zoom out of this further and leave the pregnancy component out of it and just thinking about the decision-making process in general. It really ultimately comes down to learning how to feel empowered through information and options, and also learning how to use your voice too.
Yes. Yeah. There's, I've read all the things now and heard all the things about what you are supposed to do and are not supposed to do. And then the more you look into it, the more it's like, we didn't get to where we are by, like, never having a glass of wine or, like, you know, like, one extra cup of coffee is not going to hurt every once in a while. So really just actually, like, looking into it, asking, like, okay, like, what is the evidence that something will go wrong and how often do things go wrong? And how much, kind of weighing it like an economist, like, I freaking love coffee, so it's not worth it to me to give up coffee completely. Someone who does not like coffee at all will be like, yeah, it's not worth the risk. Why would I drink coffee?
Yeah, I really like your, you know, like, your risk assessment approach too. It's and it's really black and white that way. So it's like, we can, for as much as we are sitting here highlighting the emotional aspect, we can make it about the black and white side of things and use that part of your brain too in terms of making the best choices possible for you. So I love that.
Yeah, just look into it. If I could say one thing, it's just, like, ask questions, question everything, and then do what, like, feels good to you based on what you find and the information you get.
Yeah.
Trust it. Professional.
And that's great life advice, period. So I love that. And I want to be respectful of your time. And I know that we could talk and talk and talk. And we have so many different things that we could discuss. So this definitely won't be the first and only time that you're a part of this conversation. And I so appreciate having you. We are going to wrap it up with a lightning round like we usually do. Ask you some fun questions about fitness, food, nutrition, and anything else you want to talk about. Because I know we didn't even talk about, we may need to have a podcast on this and bring your husband on. We didn't talk about your other business, which is so cool. So maybe I'll try to weave that into this conversation really quick, but that probably deserves another podcast. So side note, when Katie drops her Instagram handle, make sure you go check out her Airbnb business because it is sick and it's so cool. And I just love that the two of you are doing that. You ready for the lightning round?
I'm ready.
Okay, cool. So first question I have to ask, what's the weirdest pregnancy craving you've had?
Oh, honestly, I haven't had any cravings.
That was weird for you, right?
That was weird for me. And I will say, like, for a little bit, it was icing, not like just icing. So nothing under the icing.
Okay.
Just
a spoon and some icing.
Yeah.
Nice. What has been, like, for whether that's, like, for your body or, you know, just some of the topics we've been talking about, one of the biggest surprises or maybe misconceptions that you thought one thing and now that you're going through it, you have a completely different outlook?
Oh, it's definitely around the stuff that, like, I thought, like, one sip of alcohol was going to kill the baby. I thought that having any extra caffeine was going to make him come out with four heads. Thought that if I had a bite of sushi, like, something would go wrong. And the truth of it is none of that is at all. most places, women are having a glass of wine a lot of nights. Sushi, like, don't buy gas station sushi, but if you go to it's okay to have. Like, I was in Nantucket for a wedding and I had oysters. They were the freshest oysters I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, you're in Nantucket. That's like a requirement. Yeah.
So definitely that's been the most surprising, is like actually looking into it, like, this is okay.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. What has been, from a fitness perspective, you know, you mentioned that you started a program through Mama Stay Fit. Is there any particular exercise or maybe a movement pattern or something that maybe you didn't love pre-pregnancy and now you're doing it often and you're like, oh, like, I don't know, this is probably not the best example, but like, let's say you didn't love deadlifts and now you like really love them. Like, is there anything like that that kind of jumps into your head?
I love deadlifts, but me too. What I will say is the program is a lot of combination movements. So it's like a step up to a row and then you step down and do a lunge. And all of that is stuff that I would have never in a million years.
Right. Did that kind of blow your mind from like a fitness perspective? Because that's usually such like a, I'm going to sound like a bodybuilder, but usually such like a no-no in terms of efficacy.
Yeah. Like at first I was like, oh, people are going like, just like you go to the gym at the same time, you see all the same people.
Yeah, you felt like they were going to laugh at you.
Yeah, I was like, these people are going to think I lost my damn mind. Usually I'm doing like very traditional lifting.
That's really interesting. Is it more of a, this is not a lightning round question, but I have to ask, is that more of a bang for your buck kind of approach just in terms of your workouts being shorter and not necessarily having the need to lift as heavy? So it's a little bit, you can make the case for potentially combining some of those movements?
Honestly, the workouts are way longer than I've ever done. Like they're typically taking like almost an hour and a half.
Oh, wow.
I think it has more to do with like a lot of it is kind of unilateral movement.
Sure.
So like trying to work your core and then trying to work
and needing
pelvis.
To work your core in a different way.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. That makes sense.
Like we're not crunching or anything. That's something we're not doing. So I do think a lot of it has to do with creating rotation in your pelvis, creating space in your pelvis with a lot of like stepping up and things of that nature.
Got it. Makes sense. Cool. Well, that's awesome. Well, look at you. Now you're like getting to explore this different modality that honestly, I think that's something everybody could benefit from too. I would say even my own fitness journey in the last year plus and just the exposure of working around different trainers at my gym, I have a really different take on how I program workouts because of the knowledge that they bring to the table. And it's just cool. It's a cool side effect.
It is really nice to just have someone tell you what to do.
Yes. Amen. Sure, that's why I work out with a trainer too. Yeah. Yes. And why I have a nutrition coach. So hell yeah. I couldn't agree with that more. That's a shameless plug for, you know, both of us, but it's so true. It's so true. So one final question, and it's definitely not a lightning round response, but it's just a way to wrap up the show. If somebody made it this far in the interview, if they had only one single takeaway from the plethora of points that you've made for us today, Katie, and thank you so much for just opening up and being so candid and sharing your opinion and not being afraid to speak your mind. What would you want that takeaway for someone to be?
Just don't be afraid to ask questions, even if your questions raise eyebrows. It's so easy to just go with the status quo and go with the flow and never question, like, they're telling me to do it, so I'm going to do it. Sometimes it just doesn't work. I mean, we can look at the health of our population and see that what's going on right now, just kind of like going with the flow, unfortunately not really working when we look at our health statistics. So ask questions and like be your own advocate. You cannot expect anyone else to advocate for you if you're not doing it for yourself.
Yeah. I just had this conversation with a newer client of mine right before we started recording, and she was saying to me, you know, I'm talking to my friends and explaining to them our approach, and she's in a reverse diet right now. So for layman's terms, she's intentionally eating more food for the sake of body recomposition, and it's opposite of everything she's ever heard before. And to your saying of like, don't be afraid to ask things that are going to raise eyebrows, all of her friends are like, why are you doing that? It doesn't make sense. And I get it. I set up all of my clients and say, I'm about to tell you something that is going to be the polar opposite of anything you've ever heard when it comes to fat loss, but just hear me out. And my justification, and my justification for it is this: if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always got. And if what you're getting keeps leading you back to this starting point that you don't want to be at, is that really effective? Right. So why not to tie it back into everything you're saying, why not just open up the possibility to something else? Again, it's such a parallel to dieting. It's such a parallel to nutrition in that there is more than one way to do this. And there is a way that is the right way for you. It's just a matter of looking at all of those tools.
My gosh, yes. My dad always said the definition of insanity, same thing over and over, expecting different results.
So true. Well, again, thank you so much for this. I'm so happy that we finally sat down and actually made this happen. It's been such a pleasure, as it always is, chatting with you. And I'm excited for you to officially be a new mom in the next few months. So we are going to be keeping along with your journey. And I need you to tell everybody where we can do that. If anybody is interested in following you, where can we connect with you? Where are you hanging out on social media? Give us everything. We'll link all of it down in the show notes.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So you can find me at KT Wellness Coach, so letter K, letter T, Wellness Coach on Instagram. We talk all about my coaching, home birth. Like Chris said, I run a business that's a converted bus. My husband and I, we raise chickens. Cool. We have all the fun things going on, so you can follow us along there.
Awesome. Well, good. Well, this has been another incredible episode of the Fix Podcast. For everybody who tuned in today, please do us a favor. Go ahead and definitely follow Katie. Stay connected with us on Instagram. You can find me over at the Krista Huber, as well as the fix.officialpod. And if you liked this episode, if you know somebody in your life who might be able to benefit from it, the best thing you can do is share it. We'd also appreciate if you could leave a review. I have to shout Katie out because she was one of the first people who ever reviewed my podcast. And I'll never forget that, because it's like you read your first review and I knew that it was from you. So you're the best. So thank you for that. So take notes from what Katie's done. And please don't forget to subscribe. But seriously, leaving a review for the show does so much more than you know, and takes literally 3 seconds. If you choose not to even leave a comment on it, you can just hit those stars. But it means a lot to us. And I appreciate everybody who tunes in every other week to listen. And we are excited because it is getting towards the end of November, which means I'm going to celebrate my 3rd year. We're going into year 3 of podcasting, which is wild. It's been 2 years already, and we're only just getting started. So lots of fun things ahead. And Katie, I'm very appreciative of you being a part of this journey, and I think you're amazing, and I'm excited to continue to watch you grow in all of these new roles and everything you're pursuing day to day in your fitness, in your nutrition, being a mom, and running a business too. So congrats again for everybody who tuned in today from wherever you're listening from. We hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.